I prefer to show how people who survive, how they handle with all of this, how they try to continue their life and lives.
Hallo und willkommen. Hamburg Arts, das ist ein Podcast mit Themen und Geschichten aus der Kunstwelt. Und ich bin Kai Detlefs, Journalist in Hamburg. Eine junge Fotografin in der Ukraine, direkt an der Front. Alina Smutko, sie ist regelmäßig mit Kollegen nahe am Kampfgeschehen, also mitten in der Gefahrenzone. Sie berichtet über die Folgen des russischen Angriffskrieges und sie will wissen, wie es für die Überlebenden danach weitergeht. Die Journalistin und Dokumentarfotografin zeigt im Foxy Bilder von der Krim und von den Krim-Tataren, deren Schicksale und massiven Probleme sie schon vor Jahren thematisiert hat, nämlich gleich nach der Annexion der Krim durch die Russen. Ich begrüße jetzt Alina Smutko. Das Gespräch haben wir auf Englisch geführt. I'd like to know, what is your situation right now in the Ukraine, and where do you live, how do you work?
Currently, I live in Kyiv, and occasionally also I spend time with my family in Poltava. It's in central part of Ukraine, just in the middle way from Kyiv to Kharkiv. And also I work like in the front line, usually in the east or in the Kharkiv region. More recent, I guess, going to work on the south part of the front line. Situation is different, depends where you are. So in western Ukraine, it's kind of calm, but people are in a stress still, and because of a lot of IDPs and because of how life is changing all the time. And also, like, people around Ukraine preparing to the winter, like, we don't know what we should expect from the prices on heat, on something like this, and in general from the level of life, except bombing and something like this. In Kyiv, I guess, situation become also more calm, especially after the occupation of the Kyiv region. But risk of bombing is still higher than in the central or in the western part, because in the capital we still have some really important infrastructure also for providing something for army. So it's kind of it depends from your experience, but I guess it's more stressful than in more safe region. And the worst situation in those region which already occupied, we actually don't have a lot of information from there, from Kherson and region, from region in from Maria in Zaporizhia region, where is this huge nuclear plant is. The situation is quite bad in Kharkiv region. Also, Kharkiv is bombing like every 2-3 hours, 24/7, as well as Mykolaiv in the south. I guess Odessa is also in really stressful situation. Odessa is really like one of the main target for them, and also Odessa is like part of the myth about Russian world, and they tried to kept it or destroyed it, like Kharkiv, for example. So it's really depends where you are, I guess.
How about your work at the front line? I mean, this it sounds as if it's dangerous, right? It's risky.
I'm not sure about a level of risk which I have when I work on the front line, because the most dangerous situation, which I remember from this 6 months, I faced in Kyiv after the occupation, like during my daily routine, for example, I just drink coffee at 6 a.m. and I saw the rocket in my window. So when I'm on the front line, usually like nothing as much dangerous as I expect in advance don't happen, because I don't know, because we are lucky. I and my colleague who we traveled with, maybe, I don't know, we actually don't try to put ourselves into the risk. We try to find a safe ways to do our stories, to communicate more with civilians than with the army. So I just, I just give this work with the soldiers at the front line just for another photographers who would like to do this more, or who have more experience to cover like the war actions. I'm not really interested in this. I more would like to work with the civilians who was targeted by war or affected or something like this. So maybe that's why I don't have this like really, really dangerous experience exactly at the front line. And I guess also what is important to say, when you are at home, doesn't matter in what city in Ukraine, and you could be under bombing, you're not ready for this. You just spend time at home. You wanna feel safe here. But when you're at work, even you are in a front line, like really, really close, like in some villages in Donetsk region, you are ready for everything. You're in this protecting vest and helmet. You have like a 3 tourniquet with you, and I don't know, medicine, and you like you already learned something really important to go to the front line. So at home you are totally like unprotected. You are totally not ready for this. So that's why I can say that work at the front line is much more dangerous than to be usual civilians in the city which target, like in Kharkiv, for example. Be civilians in Kharkiv more dangerous as for me as be a photographer at the front line, for example.
So I would like you to describe your work as a photographer at the front line. What is your focus? What are your topics as a photographer?
Actually, I'm in the process for a look in my topic, because after work in Crimea, I guess, and work sometime as a sport photographer in usual life, I don't have like really some specific topic which I feel like it's my field, so I just try to find something. But for now, it's usually the topic I'm really interested in. I try to find people on the front line, civilians or soldiers or whatever, who stayed for Ukraine for some not obvious reason. For example, they are Muslims. So actually, when Muslims are really a minority in Ukraine, and there are some, I can say Islamophobic, but some xenophobia in Ukrainian society actually exist. These people like decide to fight for Ukraine, the front line. So they associated themselves with the old Ukraine, and they ready to fight for this with weapon, to be volunteer in any ways. Looking for some foreigners who become to Ukraine to protect the people. Actually, their what is the motivation? my main question, why do you do what you do? And I asked this like a lot of people who evacuated civilians, and also asked this civilians who stay in the dangerous areas, why you stay, or why you return. Even we met a lot of people who spend spring like in a more safe region, and they come back to Kramatorsk, for example. Kramatorsk, I guess, hit like every 3 days, like one two people killed like every day in the city, but people with kids, they come back. So ask why you do this, what your motivation. And I just try to find my topic in all this mess which actually continued in Ukraine, because there are really a lot of stories to tell. So there are like, I don't feel like we compete with other colleagues, because so many work right now for photographers in Ukraine. So everybody could find like their topic, and I on my way to this.
Talking about photography, I mean, what do you think about photography? Where are your chances? Where are the limits? I mean, you know what I mean. You make a statement when you're taking pictures, and so what is your attitude in a way?
It's something, you know, for reflection after you already done something. I don't have a statement for now, because I just follow the news, follow the people. Maybe when I really hope war will be over, and after I have some time to think about this, my statement will be ready for saying. But for now, I just want to show what is reality. I don't know how to say, but I'm not trying to show the dead bodies and this part of war. I don't know, maybe I can't, maybe I'm scared about this, but I prefer to show how people who survive, how they handle with all of this, how they try to continue their life and lives. So maybe this.
Okay, let's talk about the fact that you are a female, okay, and you've got a child at home. Yeah. So, how do you deal with this? I mean, a female at the front line having a child. So, it seems to be very special, okay?
It's kind of, I guess, it's two different topics. As a female, I don't feel any difference to work on the front line, because I don't see. I used to work with male colleagues, so I see how they work, how locals communicate with them, and how locals communicate with me, and how soldiers do this, and so on, so on. So, and really, this time I don't feel a difference between us. So maybe, I don't know, maybe some my colleague, and I'm not sure, it depends from gender, but they are like physically more strong, and they could wear vest a longer time than me. But it's only my problem, and problem of my previous physical low physical activities, actually. So, but actually in work, I don't feel like my gender helps me or opposite. The second part of the topic, I as a mother, how I try to manage everything and to be like, okay, already I can say this, like war photography. Actually, I guess I'm just lucky, because I have a family, and we keep gathered all this time. So the father of the kid is really pay a lot of attention of him and care about him like really a lot. My parents helped me a lot, and when war became one of the person from my family lost the job. So he had a lot of, like, he had time to help with the kid, like, to play, to stay, because kindergartens are closed in our region mostly. And it's, even for now, it's complicated to get there, because not all kindergartens have this shelter for all this, for dangerous situation, so the number of kids who can get it really, really small, and father or mother or this kid should be in army or in some really, really important infrastructure. So if you are just even if you are a journalist, it doesn't count actually. So and we gathered with my family and we tried to solve it together. I have no idea what should I do if I will be the situation like face to face by only me, so without any help, like a lot of women who forced to leave country to save their lives and to life of their kids. Only few times to hide with my kid with our home shelter. All the time we spend together, we are like in a safe condition usually. So I don't have this really horrible experience which other mothers have.
We should talk about Crimea. I mean, you did some substantial work in Crimea, right, over the years. So why did you do this and what did you find? I mean, the situation is complex, right?
I guess all my topics which I work find me, not I find this topic. It's like I started to work in Crimea accidentally. Just I wanted to support my colleague who would like to work there, and she looks for a photographer. Just suggest me to go to work there like at once. And then I try to go there by myself, and then it's like a lot of accident happens around me, and I found myself in Crimea, like spend there a lot of time. From the beginning, I didn't have some topic. I didn't have, I have only some expectations, which I heard from the media before, because I started work in 2016. It's already 3 years of an annexation was, and I guess that's it. So just some picture from media before, and I just try to find out, is it real? Is it so a lot of people wanted Putin to come to Crimea? Is it really all this referendum, all this pro-Russian stuff really exist? And what people really think about this? They were scared, maybe somebody pushed on them, maybe what is going on here? And then I find actually it was really easy. I found the Crimean Tatars there, who were relatives of the people who was arrested by new Russian governments. At first, for some inappropriate meeting, like in the beginning of annexation, they go to the meeting to support Ukraine with the Ukrainian flags, with the Crimean Tatar flags, and like after a few months when after referendum, actually Russia started to find this people who openly supported Ukraine, like to put them in jail and to show everybody that to support Ukraine, it's not okay already, like totally. Then there were relatives of people who were accused because of terrorism cases. Russia has a few organization like based on religion views, which is forbidden to exist there. One of them is Hizbut Tahrir. This organization in the world is it's usually not forbidden, but it depends from the context and from the participator. Usually these people like they go to the meeting, they talk about return to the state where Sharia law will be the main law in a state, and they try to build this society of Muslim who will follow Sharia law and try to build their own state, because they are not happy because of how other Muslim states are for now. So, because Sharia law works like not really good in this country, like Iran, Afghanistan, for example. So they try to change something. But Russia have a lot of experience of a conflict with the Muslims, especially in North Caucasus, in Chechnya, Dagestan, and so on. And after the two war in Chechnya, they just try to, I don't know, they try to make vanish everybody who support some Muslims movements so openly and so strong. So they have some government in Chechnya, for example, which Putin control well, like Ramzan Kadyrov and all his friends. And other people he tried to keep in fear, to keep them scared of the regime. And so they forbid all this organization. I guess they also forbid organization on some Christian people, but I don't remember the name of it. And they just find some people in Crimea who are obviously Muslim. Especially it's like a big Crimean Tatar family who have a lot of kids, where a woman usually cover her hair and something like this, and just accuse them in terrorism. It's really easy. So they falsified these cases and just captured the husbands, fathers from this family. And I guess around 100 people already accused and imprisoned. And a lot of them already in the mainland Ukraine, Russia, sorry. They keep, keep sitting during their punishment. So they already in jail and even in situation of deoccupation Crimea, we can't somehow help these people because they are already not in Crimea for this 8 years.
What's today? What is the situation of the Crimean Tatars? What should we know about them?
Okay, the first thing you and the audience in Ukraine, in Europe, should know that Crimea, we already understand that to be Ukrainians doesn't mean to be ethnic Ukrainian. So in this way, Crimean Tatars actually are Ukrainians, like by their way of thinking, by their statement they did a lot. So Crimean Tatars who was for now in mainland Ukraine, they support and defend Ukraine as well as Ukrainians. So they are volunteers. They are on the front line on the all regions, like really a lot. We don't mention this, but they put as much effort in our surviving, in our victory, as well as Ukrainians. We also should understand that people who stay in Crimea in really, really complicated situation, because they are, most of them are definitely pro-Ukrainian, and all this time they are waiting for some changes which Ukraine can do this 8 years by democratic way, by anyways. And they live really close, really next to main target in Crimea, and they could be under bombing from Ukrainian side. So when you under bombing, you are in Ukraine, you are under bombing from Russia, you understand this is terrifying, this unfair, and you understand what are you staying for and what are you staying against. But these people actually could be under bombing of the people who are waiting for, and this is really complicated. So. And the third point about Crimea, I guess we don't have any information from there, even from the locals. Those people who I contacted before, I'm afraid to contact them now, not to put them in danger. Nobody knows who FSB is watching for now. Does they listen your phone, or does they watch in your windows, watch what are you doing for now? So that's why we don't have any information how they deal with everything. So we are scared for them, they are scared for themselves, and it's a big complicated situation. But maybe I want to suggest those people who heard about Crimean Tatars like in the first time, just to Google something about them, and please not from the Russian speaking sources, about their history, to understand all the situation with Stalin deportation in 1944, just to understand why these people so connected with their land, why they suffer for it so much, and why we should support them in their fights, because it's our, like, we have the same goal. We want to help each other to live in Ukraine in unity, but the same way we want to help to express to help Crimean Tatars express their basic needs, to speak their language, which is completely different from Ukraine. It's like a Turk-based language, which actually was destroyed like years and years of Russian occupation, different times. So they want to improve their culture and also religion. So if, I don't know, for now, a lot of Crimean Tatars live in Lviv after they were forced to leave Crimea. So if they have opportunity and wants to build a mosque, for example, I really hope that a citizen, a local citizen of Lviv, will support them and not to stay against them just because it's like Muslims in Lviv. It's so weird, it's so awkward, we don't know what we should do. So we have to learn about each other more and help each other with all this thing, because this genocide we feel on ourselves really strong for now, which we had to feel on ourselves like during I guess, during the last 300 years of Ukrainian history from the Russian occupation, Crimean Tatars actually felt the same. The same just 'cause they are who they are.